Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I would like to remind all parties that your lines have been placed on listen only until the question and answer portion of today's conference. At that time, if you're wishing to ask a question, please press star followed by one on the keypad of your telephone, and please be sure that your telephone is unmuted and clearly record your name at the prompt so that your question may be introduced. Today's conference is being recorded. If you should have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. It is now my pleasure to introduce your first speaker today, Dr. Ken Calvert. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Welcome, everyone, and good morning. We're glad you could join us for this webinar focused on the new Advanced Wireless Research Initiative and NSF's Platforms for Advanced Wireless Research, or POWER. I'm Ken Calvert, the Division Director for the Computer Networks and Systems Division in the SIES, Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate at NSF. On the webinar today, I also have with me Dr. Tyaga Nandagopal from SIES CNS, and he's the Lead Program Director for our investments under this White House initiative. Before we start, I want to discuss a few housekeeping guidelines. The webinar is going to be about 2 hours long. And we'll present for about the first hour, 60 minutes, and then the remainder of the time will be dedicated to a question and answer session with the participants. So that said, please save your questions until the end of the presentation. And the Q&A session will be guided by the moderator, so please follow the instructions for that part of the webinar provided by the moderator. We have a pretty large number of participants on the call today, so there may be some delays before you get an opportunity to ask a question. And a summary list of the questions and answers will be published in a frequently asked questions document on the program website within the next 3 weeks. So here's our agenda. To start off, I'll provide some context on the Advanced Wireless Research Initiative, and we'll spend some time going over all the core investments that are part of this broad effort. We'll then transition to discussing in more detail the single largest component of the program, which is the Platforms for Advanced Wireless Research, or POWER. In particular, we're going to discuss the solicitation that's currently on the street, NSF 16-585, which is requesting proposals for a POWER Program Office, or PPO. We'll talk more about the scope, requirements, and the review process for the POWER Project Office solicitation. And then finally, we'll end with the Q&A session. Tyaga is going to cover the POWER program in detail later in the presentation, but first let's look at all of NSF's investments associated with the White House Advanced Wireless Research Initiative, which was announced on July 15th by the Office of Science and Technology Policy, NSF, DARPA, FCC, NIST, and NTIA. First, NSF announced a $400 million investment over the next 7 years in support of fundamental research on advanced wireless technologies. Included in that number is $50 million from NSF toward the design, development, deployment, and initial operation of four new city-scale wireless research platforms as part of the POWER program, and up to $350 million to support fundamental wireless research that can utilize these new platforms. POWER program will also be supported by an additional $35 million in cash and in-kind contribution from industry partners. In addition to the POWER program, NSF also announced two NSF prize challenges, each with $1 million in prize money, $6 million for a joint solicitation with Intel focused on information-centric networking for wireless edge networks. And I would just point out that there's another webinar on that program later today at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. $4.5 million for a U.S.-Finland solicitation on wireless network research, a research coordination network focused on millimeter wave research, and a collaboration with the DARPA Spectrum Collaboration Competition Challenge, also known as SC2, that will support the participation of NSF-funded researchers in the challenge. And then finally, two workshops that are aligned with the POWER effort. But now I'm going to turn it over to Tyaga Nandagopal to walk you through the details of each of these announcements.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So the two NSF challenges are going to be administered through a grant to the Mozilla Foundation. Mozilla will run the two prize challenge competitions, and they will be open to all. Each of them, as Ken pointed out, have $1 million in prize money. The first challenge, titled Off-the-Grid Internet, seeks to provide affordable and practical solutions that will restore communications and networking in the aftermath of a disaster. And the second challenge, which we call the Smart Community Internet, seeks low-cost solutions to help municipalities that don't have access to pervasive community-wide network infrastructure, such as fiber, to help provide them with ubiquitous wireless access through Wi-Fi and support high-bandwidth data transfers for every connected user. For each of these challenges, we will be seeking solutions that use innovative wireless technologies to provide anytime, anywhere connectivity that can support contents and services. The model is for competitors to build their own solutions and then demonstrate them in order to win the prizes in the context of a two-stage process. There will be 10 prizes awarded in each stage, in the first stage, and 3 prizes awarded in the second stage. These competitions will start in January 2017, and if you're interested, you should be on the lookout for announcements from the Mozilla Foundation in October of this year. Okay. Now, we are also very pleased to be working with Intel on a joint solicitation currently on the street. This solicitation is seeking to provide innovative research solutions to applying information-centric networking principles to wireless edge networks with the goal of enabling what we call as beyond 5G applications. You can check out the solicitation by following the link on the slide, and these slides will be made available on the program website. But in brief, we are anticipating 2 to 3 large awards of up to $3 million each, and letters of intent are required, and they are due on September 16th. That's all I'm going to say here for now, but if you want more information, please do check out the program page and also tune in to the webinar on the solicitation later today at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Please do sign up for the webinar using the program page link. We also have an updated solicitation as part of NSF's ongoing collaboration with the Academy of Finland in the area of wireless networking, a program known as Wi-Fi-S. This stands for Wireless Innovation Between Finland and the U.S. This is the fourth such solicitation, and this year's focus on research that can support and enable the emerging Internet of Things. The way this program works is that U.S. researchers receive funding from NSF, and Finnish collaborators receive funding from the Academy of Finland for the purpose of pursuing joint projects. There's an NSF solicitation, and there is also a parallel solicitation from Finland. If you are interested, the full proposal deadline is October 17th, and the American and Finnish collaborators can find more details by following the links listed on the slide. If you have questions about Wi-Fi-S, I encourage you to contact the lead program director, my colleague, Wenjing Lo, at NSF. Next, NSF recently made an award for a new Research Collaboration Network, or RCN, focused on millimeter wave communication networks. And this is led by Professors Akbar Saeed and Shinyu Zhang at the University of Wisconsin. The RCN is going to be a 3-year effort with a kickoff meeting this winter in December in Washington, D.C. As part of the effort, there will be a series of 6 workshops that will cover various thematic areas, all focusing on spectrum about 26 gigahertz. Objectives of this RCN include bringing together industry, federal, and academic researchers to share latest outcomes, prepare research roadmaps, and publish them to the community, and also to conduct policy research outreach with regulators and convey an unbiased view as a scientific entity. And finally, to create synergy and pathways to tech transfer and standards formation. So if you're interested, please contact the PIs noted here. Now, some of you may be aware of DARPA's call for a Spectrum Collaboration Challenge competition, or SC2, as it's called. This is an attempt to address the current situation we face of increasing demand for wireless spectrum. The initiative aims to award teams for developing smart systems that can collaboratively, rather than competitively, adapt in real time to today's fast-changing, congested spectrum environments. The 3-year challenge will start in 2017 and is open to all, including academics and students. A proposals day is being held on August 10th for those interested, and you can participate online. Now, limited funds are available from DARPA to seed solution development by select teams, assuming they clear the required technical hurdles at the different stages. NSF will be providing additional support for academic researchers who will be participating in the SC2. These will be awards that are meant to support students for developing innovative solutions and will be up to 5 to 6 awards total for each phase, starting in March 2017. All the details are outlined in the Dear Colleague letter, NSF 16-114, which you can find at the included link and also through our web search. Finally, we would like to bring your attention to two upcoming workshops NSF is supporting. The first one will focus on communities of practice for networking testbeds, taking a look at lessons learned from running large testbeds. It will be held in late October in 2016, and it will be led by Professors Morley Mao from University of Michigan and Ivan Sesker from Rutgers University. The second workshop is on ultra-low latency networks, and this will focus on the challenges associated with delivering ultra-low latency services via the wireless edge. This workshop will be held in early November, led by Professor Aitan Moriano from MIT. Okay, so the remainder of this presentation from going forward is going to be focused on the platforms for wireless research, or POWER. Okay, so what you see here is a quick summary of the key attributes of this program and the approach. First, there are an order of 400 university researchers whose efforts would benefit from at-scale testing capabilities to ensure successful validation of their research ideas. Substantial NSF research investments, along with industry contributions of more than $35 million and growing at this time, are being leveraged to create the research platform that will meet this critical need. Early industry involvement has been key, leading to the current model of multi-use research platforms supporting pre-competitive research topic areas. Or in other words, research that will translate to societal impact beyond 3 to 8 years, informed by a bottom-up process featuring input from university researchers and industry. The platform scope shown on this slide is meant only to be an example, and one can conceive that a city university collaboration with local industry partners can potentially increase the size of these platforms to suit the level of resources that is available to them. In terms of flexibility and speed, we envision 1 to 2 platforms being deployed per year in years 1 and 2, followed by a third or fourth platform in years 3 to 5. Finally, we envision streamlined governance, deployment, and operations for these platforms. There will be a governance board focusing on upfront research and policy issues, not tactics, and city university groups proposing to host each platform will propose how to streamline deployments and operations. So, why POWER? In a nutshell, the $50 million that NSF annually invests in fundamental pre-competitive wireless research can be greatly strengthened by giving academic researchers access to at-scale end-to-end research platforms and by engaging industry earlier in the research pipeline in order to help define and focus research questions. As it stands today, long-term wireless research experiences the well-established valley of death, and industry may well be missing out on potential breakthroughs coming out of the lab. The POWER effort provides industry and academia the opportunity to bridge this valley of death through a partnership for shaping, focusing, and testing fundamental wireless research at realistic scales outside the lab environment. So this effort has broad industry support, as you can see from the list of current POWER Charter members. These are members of the POWER Industry Consortium who have already made cash and in-kind commitments to support these platforms. What you see here is over a list of over 20 wireless carriers, device manufacturers, equipment vendors across the wireless industry, along with private sector wireless associations, and this group is growing as we speak now to include even more companies. For those who want to keep track, the latest member information can be found at the website noted above, advancedwireless.org. Now, the POWER program stands to provide value to all the stakeholders involved. For industry, the companies get an advantage of 4 simpler, flexible, multi-use research platforms whose deployment is going to be staged over 3 to 5 years, and they will shape fundamental research by helping to select the most flexible research platforms needed to meet researcher needs and industry needs. They will help shape research topics covered by at least 50% of research time on these testbeds funded by NSF and other funding agencies. And industry will also gain preferential access to those research results. They will also gain access to research time for proprietary company research on these large platforms, covering the remaining 50% of the research time, with the initial members, the founding members, getting additional access times compared to the others. Now, this will also serve to focus research to increase the number of potentially disruptive research efforts and speed the time to market of ideas. And as the industry also benefits by expanding the pool of wireless experts through the education and training and nurturing of students that will happen on research that will happen with this platform. The research community clearly will also stand to benefit from the opportunity to gain feedback from research in line with industry trends and current topics of interest. And they'll have greater potential to speed up transition of the research into industry end users. And the cities themselves who host these platforms, they will be able to build core wireless capabilities through creative university partnerships. They will be able to attract additional government and company research funding and local wireless jobs. And they'll also be able to utilize this enhanced wireless services to capabilities to enhance city services provided to the citizens. So what are these platforms going to look like? As an overview, we envision that the platforms, the locations will focus on small cities or campuses plus small cities or select portions of a large city that will cover a campus within a city. So cities large and small could be quite competitive as prospective hosts for the platform. Research platforms will be built on software-defined radios, devices that are capable of operating across multiple frequency bands, and connected via programmable back-end infrastructure with access to high-speed network connectivity such as Internet 2 or other backhaul and not production networks. Okay? And researchers will be able to take advantage of the multi-use capability of the platform infrastructure by plugging in additional experimental technologies. Right? So we are going to have an open infrastructure. So we'll talk about the process for designing and deploying the platforms themselves in a few slides. But in brief, right, the RFPs themselves will seek proposed platforms enabling advanced wireless research that have the capability to support a minimum number of research topic areas. Examples being millimeter wave, dynamic spectrum, architecture, plus others proposed by responders. Okay? And the proposed experimental research platforms will allow researchers to validate the cutting-edge technologies in these areas, spectrum usage paradigms, application performance, and our service behavior. Okay. Now, in terms of scale and technologies for these platforms, we envision that each platform will have 10 to 20 sites or radio antenna locations. Okay. They will feature SDRs capable of operating across multiple frequencies and technologies. They will all be connected via a programmable backhaul network infrastructure supporting software-defined networks and a network function virtualization, with access to high-speed network connectivity such as Internet 2 or other backhaul. And these platforms will provide approximately 100 SDR-based clients across a variety of stationary and mobile, whether it's human or vehicle platforms, at a minimum. Right? So here's a sample architecture showing some of these features. Right? The key takeaway from this slide is that the research platform will provide core infrastructure that supports an SDR radio layer, a wireless fiber backhaul, a software configurable infrastructure, SDNs and NFVs included, the ability to add or swap components for projects, the time or geographical sharing of the test environment. Right? And it will be flexible enough to support multiple research areas, some of which are listed here. That's the bottom line. To reiterate, now this is the bottom up process, and we are not dictating, either the NSF or the industry is not dictating what a specific platform should look like. Instead, we are seeking proposals that have the capability to support a minimum number of research topic areas, plus others as proposed by responders, right? So once again, to reiterate some examples of the topic areas that are enabled include, but are not limited to, millimeter waves, dynamic spectrum, architectures, mobility at scale, wide area, wide spaces, network measurements and metrology, applications and services, and so on, okay? Now, the specifics of how much coverage within each of these topic areas that each of these platforms will cover will be left to the discretion of the proposers, and we are looking for innovative solutions in this space. Next, I want to go over in broad strokes how this is going to work. NSF will support a Power Project Office, or the PPO, as we will call for the rest of the discussion, to manage the design, development, deployment, and operations of the advanced wireless research platforms. Ideally run by a non-profit organization or a college university with no policy agenda, the PPO will be selected through a competitive solicitation, which we will talk about in the last part of the presentation. The Power Program is a true public-private partnership, and the PPO will integrate support from both industry consortium and NSF along with other federal agency partners whose support may become available as time goes on. And it will also establish and support the Power Steering Council, which will serve to advise the PPO in all aspects of deployment and operations of these research platforms. Now, here's another look at the proposed governance process. Right, there will be a selection of an impartial managing office, which is the PPO, and there is a Power Steering Council. Right, the PPO will be based at a nonprofit or an academic organization with no policy agenda, selected through a competitive bidding process. The Power Steering Council will include members of the industry consortium, the wireless research leaders from the community, and NSF will serve as an ex officio member. The Steering Council will be responsible for setting the research agenda for private partners, addressing policy issues and standards for governance, and maximizing the return on investment for all public and private partners. It will be constituted by early 2017. The PPO will then integrate contributions from the government and corporate partners. RFPs for each platform will be created, challenging respondents to achieve the power goals in terms of the minimum number of research topic areas, for example. The RFPs will then be issued, and the proposers will submit the proposals. Right, the focus will be on joint responses from local coalitions made up of universities, municipalities, and companies in the local sphere. Next, the proposals will then be evaluated and awards will be made. Right, the Steering Council plus other experts will evaluate responses and select winners using a model very similar to the NSF's traditional review process. The awards will be made to the local coalitions to create and manage research platforms with oversight from the PPO and the Power Steering Council. Okay? And then, after all this is done, the research will finally be conducted on the platforms. So we aim for the platforms, as I said before, to host a 50-50 split between government-funded research, which is pre-competitive, and private research that can be possibly competitive. Right? Now, the research results in IP ownership for the publicly funded activities will be governed upon by well-agreed principles, including the Bayh-Dole Act, while the private research results will be owned by the sponsors of those results. Right? So we won't have a clear separation there. Now, it is important to note that not all the platforms will come online at the same time. It is going to be a staged process with the opportunities to learn and integrate lessons from the initial deployments into the RFPs and the development of subsequent platforms. This graphic shown here is one possible timeline for the program. Now, this may vary as we learn through the process, right? So the solicitation for the PPO is now on the street and will be discussed next. The PPO will be awarded in early 2017, and it will drive the proposed platform design process and release the RFPs for the first platforms starting in mid-2017. We envision 1 to 2 platforms being deployed per year in years 1 and 2, and then followed by a third or fourth platform in years 3 and 5. And plans for sustainability and adaptability evolution of these platforms over the long term will also be an important review criteria in evaluating the platform proposals, which will happen in 2017. Now, having covered the Power Initiative overall, I want to specifically now spend the rest of the time talking about the solicitation for the Power Project Office. I will start by noting information that you should have available. The solicitation number is NSF 16-585, which you can easily find with the web search. It's also linked off the site's webpage. As we have discussed, the PPO is being established to manage and run the 4 city-scale platforms of the program, of the Power program. Specifically, the PPO, working closely with the wireless research community and the industry consortium, will assume responsibility for the research platforms through design, development, deployment, and operations. Second, the proposal deadline for the PPOs is 5 p.m. your local time on November 23rd. NSF experts award one project. The project may request up to $5 million over 5 years. And these awards will be likely made by early spring 2017. I'm next going to talk about the specifics of the solicitation, specifically the roles and responsibilities of the PPO as expected in the Power program, and the key proposal sections and what we expect to see in each. We will then do an overview of the review and award selection process, and then we will start taking questions and answers at the end. The Power Project Office requires dedicated project staff. This is critical, with expertise in collaborative research and the ability to provide services to the wireless research community. So we require effective management of advanced networking infrastructure projects with a large wireless communication component, including planning, deployment, and operations. We are also going to look for effective management of large-scale wireless and software-intensive projects, including the planning, deployment, implementation, and the lifecycle management of such projects. We are going to look for expertise in technical report editing, web-based publications, as well as communication outreach to the broader scientific community and general public. So these are the critical skills that we expect, right, from the PPO. So the PPO management should include a lead PI who will serve as a project director of the Power Project Office. This individual will work full-time on the project. They will be having day-to-day involvement in the program in a direct fashion. And the qualifications and duties of this person includes having an established track record of leadership and management of such teams and projects of this size and scale. They will be someone who will work closely with NSF program officers and the industry consortium to keep all parties involved and informed of all current PPO activities. And they will also serve as an ex officio member of the steering council for the Power program. The Power program is going to be carried out in three phases. And so this solicitation refers to the creation of the PPO, which will work in the design and development phase of the Advanced Wireless Research Testbed. The PPO will be responsible for developing an RFP and running the subsequent merit review criteria, which is comparable to NSF for sub-awardees. Specifically, the PPO will issue the RFP for the testbed within 6 months of its establishment and will fund no more than 4 advanced wireless research platforms across the country. It will articulate the desired capabilities for these platforms. The PPOs should describe the contributions that the Power Industry Consortium will offer to the selected awardees in the RFP. It will describe the deployment and operational support and oversight that from the PPO and the steering council that will be available to the awardees. And it will also reissue the RFP annually on an as-needed basis to reflect the nature of the contributions, which may be changing as time goes on. And we expect these annual deadlines will be there for the first 3 years. The pre-deployment phase will cover requirements that should be met by sub-awardees before a testbed can be launched. During this phase, the PPO will work closely with the sub-awardee organizations to support the design, deployment, and operations of each of these research platforms, and the PPO will provide the common guidelines, the management structures, and the operational interfaces needed for these platforms. The proposers for PPO solicitation should clearly address in the proposal how they will help the sub-awardees in the pre-deployment phase. Once the PPO identifies potential awardees, the following steps, which are listed here, must be taken prior to deployment, and these constitute the final design baseline for that particular research platform, which we're going to cover in the next slide. Okay, so the specific steps the PPO must take prior to deployment of the testbed are listed here. This is also in the solicitation, right, and the slides will be made available offline. I'm not going to read them all right now, but these are all aspects related to the planning and operational capabilities for planning and operational capabilities for handling these tasks must be described as part of the proposal. The PPO proposal must address the capabilities of the team as well to address this task. NSF will approve the final design baseline for each advanced research platform, and then the power deployment activities can begin. Now, contingent upon the successful performance of the PPO during the design stages, it is expected that the PPO will then subsequently assume all responsibilities for the deployment and operations. Okay? So, the way it will work is separate sub-awards will be issued by the PPO for the deployment and operations for each platform, right? And NSF will provide the guidance to the PPO on each platform deployment and operations as it progresses through the life cycle. Now, we will go over the specifics of the proposal submission and review process. Note that there is a pre-proposal required and the due date is by September 20th, 5 p.m. local time for the submitters, and the full proposal deadline is November 23rd, 2016. And this is going to be a cooperative agreement, and as I mentioned before, exactly one award will be made. The costs are not to exceed $1 million per year over 5 years, and all proposals submitted should provide a clear framework for pursuing the design, development, deployment, and operational activities. In this proposal, proposers should not identify specific activities or associated sub-awardees for these platforms. Okay, those come later. So the next slide is, we're going to talk about those who can submit, right? So there are two groups who are eligible to submit, the universities and 2 and 4 year colleges accredited in and having a campus in the U.S. Can apply. Nonprofits that are non-academic institutions can also apply. Sub-awardee institutions that can be, that may be named, also have the same restrictions. So no for-profits are allowed. Now, in terms of who can be a PI, any individual can be a PI or co-PI in no more than one proposal submitted in response. So if by accident you end up finding your name in more than one proposal, either as a PI, co-PI, or a senior personnel, then only the proposal with the earliest submission date will be accepted, and the other ones will be returned without review. So please be aware of the individuals on your team have consented to participate on a project and that they are not listed on any other proposal. Okay. The solicitation requires that the inclusion of each team member be justified, and it should show how this person will contribute to the overall vision of the program and the specific goals of the proposal. I'm first going to talk about the pre-proposal, which is due as is required, and is due by 5 p.m. on September 20th. So the pre-proposal must have three components: a cover sheet that includes an indication of the PI and the co-PIs and their affiliations, the overall total budget with the project title prefixed by the keyword power pre-proposal. The second component in the pre-proposal is a brief project description, up to 4 pages. Clearly labeled sections should include project title, the investigator information, and the concise description of the program management activities that will be key to the goals and milestones of the program. It should include a description of the management needs and significant costs, along with the organizational and management structure, as well as qualifications of the PPO staff. Now, the third component is a bio sketch of the PIs and the co-PIs, not the senior personnel. This should be up to 2 pages. So please note the brevity of the pre-proposal. Right? You get up to a total of 6 pages. And again, this is just a prelude to the full proposal. The pre-proposals are required, and they must be submitted through Fastlane. Submitters will receive feedback from NSF program officers indicating either an encourage or a discourage decision. The encourage finding generally indicates that the proposal appears to be responsive to the program guidelines and is a good candidate for further development. A discouraged finding generally indicates the project is not responsive to this solicitation or has serious conceptual flaws that would not benefit from further development as a full proposal submission. The feedback provided to in pursuant to this preliminary proposal is advisory. This is the encourage or discourage, right? So we are submitters of both encourage and discourage preliminary proposals are eligible to submit full proposals. Right. Responses about whether it's encourage or discourage will be provided within a month of the submission deadline. Now let's move on to the full proposal. Right. So the full proposal must include an updated title with the prefix of power full proposal, and the project description now has 30 pages, right? And it should not exceed that much, right? This includes charts, figures, graphs, maps, and pictures. Now, a supplementary document should include the list of project personnel and the partner institutions involved in the proposal. The project description in the full proposal must have two main components. Section 1 should describe the contributions of the key personnel in the past 5 years and should not be more than 3 pages. Please note the qualifications and contributions made by the personnel that should demonstrate the ability to work effectively with the U.S. wireless research community, or experience with advanced networking infrastructure and effective management of large projects. Section 2 should focus on the details of the project development plan for the PPO. Right? The project development plan is a document that's going to describe the activities, budgets, and schedules for all design, development, and operation, deployment and operations activities related to these research platforms, up to 4 platforms total. Specifically, the plan should address the detail of the scope of work necessary to go through the different phases, including the process of selecting the research platforms in conjunction with the NSF and in conjunction with the industry consortium. Now, proposers should identify and discuss all project goals and milestones. Okay. We also require a risk mitigation part. It's a key section where proposers should discuss any risks associated with completing the design development activities as planned, including technical as well as organizational risks. Proposers can also discuss lessons learned from their from the proposing team's past experiences to demonstrate the risk mitigation capabilities. All full proposals must include a schedule that shows the sequencing of the major activities to be conducted in sufficient detail to justify the proposed budget. It's currently envisioned that the PPO will be prepared to host a concept design review within 2 months of the award and a preliminary design review within a subsequent 4 month period. And these definitions of the concept design review and the preliminary design review are in accordance with the well accepted Six Sigma processes for project management. The management plan should describe the PPO's organization and management structure. The proposers should describe the structure and the processes to be used for ensuring collaborative interactions with the steering council, governance, and the research community. You should also describe the approach to be used to identify and prioritize development activities and the competitive process that will be used in the selection of the deployment activities for the sub-awardees and the consultants and so on. And lastly, the project description should also include a description of the office meeting and facilities that will be available for the project. This should include office equipment, communication capabilities, and institutional meeting spaces needed to conduct the project business. That's the project description. Now, I'll go over the review process that will be used to select the PPO. The NSF review process will be run just like other peer review panels that NSF conducts. It will include a combination of a panel, ad hoc reviews, site visits, and or reverse site visits as necessary. Okay. Proposals are going to be evaluated for intellectual merit and broader impacts. You should remember that intellectual merit encompasses the potential to advance knowledge, while the broader impacts encompasses the potential to benefit society and contribute to the achievement of specific desired societal outcomes. Please see the NSF proposal and award policies and procedures guide for more information. Right. In the next slide, we are going to address additional review criteria. So for this solicitation, we are going to look for the specific review criteria as follows. We're going to look for the capabilities of the proposing team, and specifically their experience in managerial, technical, and administrative aspects of a project of this size. And we look for the goals, milestones, and activities proposed in the project development plan. Does it cover all the essential aspects of the research platform design and development? The third criteria would be that the submitting organization provide a reasonable plan for risk mitigation. Are there risks that are not adequately addressed? And the other criteria would be if the schedule is reasonable. Are there key milestones that are clearly identified? And the last criteria is that the submitting organization provide a clear management plan. So with those review criteria, once again, as reminders, is that the pre-proposal is due by 5 p.m. local time on September 20th. The full proposal is due November 23rd, and we will be providing a notification by October 20th for the pre-proposals. Now, we are hitting a stage where we are ready for the questions. Before we get there, I want to make sure I let you know that we will be processing all the questions here today, plus other questions we have received offline. And we'll develop a formal FAQ that which will be posted on the solicitation website in late August. The website is linked here. And also, please remember that the questions answered today are informal. They are served to clarify. The solicitation is the official word. The formal FAQ, which will be posted on the website, is an advisory document as well, and it's not binding. With that, I'm going to throw the floor open for questions. The moderator will guide you.
Thank you, sir. At this time, anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star followed by 1 on the keypad of your telephone. Please be sure that your telephone is unmuted and clearly record your name at the prompt so that your question may be introduced. Again, it is star 1 to ask a question. And if you do, if someone else does ask that question, you can always press star 2 to remove yourself from the queue. One moment, please. And once again, if we have anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star followed by 1 on the keypad of your telephone.
So again, remember, you can ask questions about the overall initiative, the other efforts that Ken had discussed earlier, and we had gone over the earlier part, the research platforms themselves, or the PPO solicitation itself in particular. So everything is fair game.
And, sir, we do have a question from Demetrius. Your line is open, sir.
Are there any provisions regarding international collaborations through this program?
So we do have several companies that are part of the consortium, which happen to be international companies with a presence in the U.S. I would like to ask you, are you thinking of universities internationally, researchers, or are we talking about companies?
Mostly universities. However, it's true that 5G has been developed mostly by international companies. Is being carried developed by international companies, so maybe also international companies would be appropriate for this call.
So we do have international companies, as I mentioned before. If you look at the charter members, there are quite a few of them that are playing a key role in 5G development that are already part of the consortium. In terms of universities, I'm not certain how they will be able to play a role in the development of a research platform that's located in the U.S. So if you have any specific aspects of how they would be participating, you can shoot me an email offline and I will be able to answer specifically to that. But at this time, I'm unable to see how an external institution not in the U.S. can benefit from participating.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And once again, if we have anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, it is star followed by 1. And, sir, our next question comes from Paul. Paul, your line is open. Please check your mute button.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Can you mention anything about cost sharing and how that might be? Is it allowed, and would it be included in the review process?
For the Power Project Office, no, cost sharing is not allowed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Greg.
Hi. My question has to do with the interaction between the PPO and the subsequent solicitation of the individual designs. Because you mentioned that the PPO will have a role in the design of these platforms. Is that more after a submission comes in, or is it some combination they somewhat specify in the RFP, and then there's a collaborative thing afterwards?
Just waiting for the sound to get muted.
I have a technical problem.
I can hear you. So let me proceed with the answer. The design guidelines that the PPO is going to support is at a high-level design primitives, right? So we are going to have multiple project research platforms, and we want to have a uniform, what we call as management and operational interfaces. So the PPO is going to be instrumental. They're going to come up with design specifications for those, and they will be sharing those as part of the RFP process. And we expect that any proposers for the individual platforms themselves should ascribe to or help improve those design interfaces. So that would be the extent. The individual design of the platforms themselves will be left to the proposers. So the PPO will provide the framework for the design. Let me put it this way.
Okay, thank you.
So we expect the individual proposers to have quite a bit of flexibility in terms of what type of platforms, the capabilities that they want to support within the platforms, but the PPO is going to help with them in terms of the operational and the managerial aspects of the framework.
please check your mute button.
Yes, I'm unmuted.
Sir, you may ask your question.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Shuman Banerjee from Wisconsin. I have two questions. One is related to the subsequent solicitation that will come out once the main solicitation comes out of the PPO selected for the four platforms. So I know in programs such as CRI or MRI, you discourage letters of support. Are letters that indicate, external researchers' interest in using such platforms encouraged or discouraged in this particular solicitation?
You should remember that each of these platforms are envisioned as a community infrastructure, so they are going to be open to all NSF-funded researchers, and the platforms should support access to all of them. We view the external letters of support saying that any particular researcher would be interested as unnecessary, because everybody is going to be asked to use this, or they'll be directed to using these platforms, unless there's a very clear-cut collaboration of any sort. We do not see why those would be necessary, but again, those RFPs are not yet out, so we will discuss these at that stage.
Okay. The other question relates to one of the other programs, the Intel, the Information-Centric Networking Program.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, given that, say, you have a partner like Intel that's providing partial funding or has some relationship, how much of the review process or the decision process will be guided by Intel, or is it an exactly neutral process just as NSF holds its review panels? Is it going to be the same way?
Right. So the normal process for such joint programs with the company and NSF, so we will cover the Intel one specifically in the webinar later in the afternoon today at 3 p.m. Eastern time. But the normal process is each company will decide to run its own review process, and NSF will run its own, and we do a joint decision on the awards. So this is a typical process that we follow, and we expect something similar. We have something similar for the Intel one as well. And the criteria for those are outlined in the solicitations themselves.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robert Jackson.
yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So the PPO solicits proposals from the research people who want to form research platforms. And those proposals have some researchers that are forming a group that they contribute to that proposal, are the research platforms awarded, and then after the award, the research platform solicits proposals from the general research community?
Right. So you are more correct on the latter part of it. So essentially, the platforms are going to be built through a group of universities and local cities. And once the platforms are built, they will support additional research infrastructure, research to be done on top of the infrastructure from other researchers who will be anywhere in the country.
Great, thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah. It's a two-stage process. The funding for the power program, the $50 million investment by NSF and the industry consortium is towards construction of the platforms themselves. And the additional research funds that will come through NSF and other industry resources will be on top of those platforms once they are built.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Richard Gale.
Hi, you can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I just was wondering, how small, small cities? Any advantage to a rural proposal?
No, I mean, we are looking to have a critical mass of users who can actually test these things, right? We need to have enough users around, many of these research applications that we would like to test, scenarios that we would like to test, there is a specific user densities that are required. To the extent that a small city or a rural environment can meet those criteria, they will be deemed as useful. Right? I mean, if you're talking about deployments of small cells, for example, and these small cells, you need a certain level of density in order to be able to validate certain ideas with these small cells.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, again, that's only one part of it. There is also the whole notion of wide area, wide space, and other activities that are we would like to see supported, and you know that's something that you can discuss. Again, this could have rural extensions. It doesn't have to be just localized to a city. It could be a city with an extension to a nearby rural communities and so on, and that's perfectly acceptable.
Thank you. And once again, if we have anyone wishing to ask a question or make a comment, please press star followed by one at this time. And sir, at this time, I'm showing no additional questions.
Okay. So I can also go over a few questions that we received from other folks offline, right? So the one of the key questions is, can local corporate sponsors, companies that are in the local ecosystem, can they participate in the individual RFPs for the platforms without being part of the consortium? And the answer is yes. They can definitely participate in directly without being members of the consortium themselves. If they're interested in more than one platform, we encourage them to join the consortium, industry consortium, but they can specifically partner with one or two with the local proposals that are being developed for the platforms themselves. Now, the other question that we saw is how are these platforms going to become living platforms, or dynamically adaptable, right? So this is something that we, NSF, has been paying a lot of attention to. So it's one of our goals, to ensuring long-term viability. So we would request that proposals for these platforms will address this issue. I mean, we are looking for innovative ideas. The PPO itself will come up with some guidelines for this adaptability. The industry consortium is also very keen on, for example, swapping equipment out to keep the research current as well. So these will be aspects that we will discuss before releasing the RFP and share with the community. We will also have a series of workshops to seek inputs from the cities and the researchers on what they would like to see in these RFPs for the platforms themselves in terms of capabilities and design metrics, for example. These will happen throughout the next 2 years or so. So we will have workshops every 6 months held at different places within the city with different target audiences. Some specifically targeting the cities and some specifically targeting researchers and a mix of them and so on. So your input will be vital to you know helping us craft the best solicitation possible. I also want to make sure there's a question that I was asked about in terms of team structures, who should be leading? Should it be the city or should it be the university? And our answer is it could be both. Right, the proposal, but the key is the proposal should demonstrate that the chosen lead, whether it's the city or the university team, is the person that's most capable to follow through on the proposed platform plan. Okay. We also had several questions from researchers who have said, what have you learned from Orbit and Genie that can be applied to this effort, right? And one of the key results, that the lessons that we've learned, which have applied here, is that the city-university teams end up getting the best results because there's mutual accountability between them, right? And also, we ended up bringing in industry at an early stage here because we believe that that will help us avoid making the technology choices that can imperil the long-term viability of the platform. And the lesson we have learned from initiatives like Genie is that it's important to build a community, and that's a core value to NSF around the deployment as well as operations usage of these infrastructures. And this bottom-up approach is what we hope will be reflected throughout this program. Now, the other question was, can nonprofits be eligible to apply for constructing these platforms? And the answer is yes. They can also lead research platform proposals, right? It doesn't have to be just cities and universities alone. Now, these platforms will also feature a common testbed interface, operations interface. There will be adequate tutorials that will be created, and there will be ongoing support. And this is all lessons we have learned from Genie and other research infrastructure projects. And the PPO will be heavily involved in supporting these activities. Okay. There was also a question that said, how are we going to filter or screen the kind of research that will run on this platform? So is there going to be one, right, to determine whether they're going to be suitable or not? So there is going to be a review process that will be determined by the Power Steering Council, which will be led by the PPO. And the goal is to ensure that any research that will be done on these platforms will align with the overall mission of the Power program. Now, this will all be established, the PPO is awarded in consultation with NSF, the industry consortium, and also the stakeholders from the research communities. Okay, so everybody is going to be involved in setting these standards. So think of this as a supercomputing model where researchers apply for time, they present their projects, and they get selected for those operations. So the exact standards and governance processes will be worked out in final detail with your extensive input from the community once the PPO is established. Now, again, there is no specific predetermined geographic sites that we are talking about. As I had discussed and mentioned again, I want to emphasize that. The geographic area that will be a function of the type of the wireless networks that the platform is going to feature, the scale of the networks, and the effort involved in setting up and maintaining something of that scale. Right? And plus, whatever cooperation that the cities and the local institutions can provide. And all of these are going to be open interfaces. So they're open hardware and open software interfaces that are going to be reusable and shareable by others. Are there any questions at this time?
And, sir, at this time I'm showing no questions. However, once again, as a reminder, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one.
Okay. There was also a question whether FFRDs can participate in testing on the platforms or in actually building the platforms. No, the PPO, they're not eligible for the PPO, right? The platforms themselves can involve FFRDCs. They are definitely eligible to work on apply for the research part of it. There's no question about it. They can collaborate on the building of platforms as well, right? So they are perfectly reasonable options for the platform RFPs themselves. There was a question on the role of US Ignite, because US Ignite was involved in the formation of the industry consortium and was involved in the White House announcement of the initiative. So there is a question of what is the US Ignite's role, and the PPO office has been set up. So US Ignite, as I mentioned, helped from the consortium, but the PPO is a distinct entity. So the US Ignite can apply to be to run the PPO, right? But they don't have a guaranteed access. They're going to be evaluated just like anybody else if they apply. And regardless of whoever gets awarded to run the PPO, once the PPO is established, the industry consortium will transition and will be linked to the PPO, and it won't be involved with US Ignite anymore. So whoever is running the PPO will be the person managing the industry consortium at that time. And of course, there's another question, is the Genie project office and the Power project office going to be related? They are not. These are two distinct entities. They're independent from each other, and there are no relationship between them. Okay, so there is a question offline that says, can multiple universities form a team? Yes, multiple universities can form a team. We expect that for these platforms, they are geographically co-located in order to make sense that they can work together on the platform, which will be a physical entity within a city. So we are expecting that in certain cities where there is a critical density of universities, they could partner together. Okay, there's a question about the spectrum that these platforms are going to operate in, and is there going to be a need for licensing? So this is an important question. So we expect the platforms to be using a diverse set of spectrum bands, depending on the types of wireless networks that are going to be supported. For example, millimeter waves will use bands about 20 gigahertz. Again, there's a huge array of bands even there. We are looking at an open platform, and we are opening it up for experimentation anywhere between 300 megahertz all the way to 100 gigahertz. We expect the platforms, the proposals to be tuned to the FCC spectrum policies in this regard, right? Now, it's important to remember that FCC has created a new program called the license mechanism called the Program Experimental License that will allow for testing on virtually any frequency and make it easy to obtain those licenses. And proposers will be expected to obtain these licenses when they submit a proposal for the platform to validate the feasibility that the platform can actually work in the bands that they are going to design, right? So the FCC website for receiving applications for this program experimental license is expected to come online shortly, and it will definitely be available with adequate time for all proposers to look at it and evaluate the feasibility of them receiving licenses in different bands. Are there any questions now?
Yes, sir. Our next question comes from Chris.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about, so after the proposal phase, it sounds like you'll select four. I can't remember if it was four or six centers nationally. And then will the whole process be repeated again next year?
Right, so the timeline slide that we had shown essentially said that there's going to be four platforms overall, and this is staggered in between years one to four, right? So we will issue the RFP first. We expect to award one to two platforms in the first 2 years, and then years three and four we'll expect to award one platform each, right? So there'll be a four in total. Not all in year one. Year one would be one to two.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
And at this time, I'm showing no additional questions.
Okay. So we received another question that talked about is the platforms going to consist of research on infrastructure itself, or it will be research on top of the infrastructure, right? And our goal is it can be both, right? So initially the platforms are going to be very experimental, and therefore there will be a lot of research on infrastructure that will happen. And once the platforms mature over time, they will support an increasing fraction of research on top of the infrastructure, right? And we expect a mix of both to happen with exact mix varying over time. And we are not going to predefine what it's supposed to be, but again, we have given out example such areas, and it's up to the proposers to put forward ideas in that space. Okay. Any other questions?
And, sir, I'm still showing no questions.
Okay. All right. At this time, I want to thank all of you for participating in the webinar and showing interest in the initiative overall. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact any of us involved, Dr. Ken Calvert or myself or any of the program officers within the NSF Networking Technologies and Systems Program. We'll be happy to answer questions. If you have specific questions on the PPO, please refer to the solicitation first and contact the program officers listed in the solicitation for further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. Thank you so much for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.